Our scripture this morning begins that it's 6 days before Passover. It's only 6 days before the Passover is to begin. Jerusalem will be full of people. Full of people coming from far, coming from close. Full of Jewish people coming to celebrate what God has done for them as a people. They will celebrate the fact that they were slaves in Egypt. They were no people. They were called Hebrews, which basically means mongrel nobodies. It was a slur. It was a slang. It was not something they wanted to be. And God came and rescued them out of Egypt. He bent the Pharaoh's will with many plagues, the last of which was the plague of the death of the firstborn of each home. And there was only one way to escape, to sacrifice a lamb and to put the blood of the lamb above the doorpost or on the doorpost. And then the angel of death would pass over. And so they called the celebration the Passover. The day they celebrated that God had delivered them from being slaves, had made them a people, had renewed his covenant with them and called them his own. He had brought them out of Egypt and made them a great nation, settling them in a land of promise. This was where the minds of the people were. This was the blessing that they were remembering. What great things God had done for them. People came early, and Jesus was one of them. It was only 6 days before Passover, and Jesus and the group of followers, including the 12 and his other disciples that followed him wherever he went, had come to Jerusalem. And they were just a short way out in a town called Bethany. Bethany was just east of the Mount of Olives. And it was a town where one of Jesus' greatest miracles in his ministry had taken place. Bethany was the place where he had raised Lazarus from the dead. Raised him from the dead. He had not been like the little girl that he said was just sleeping. Lazarus had been dead. Dead for 4 days. Dead and in the tomb. Dead and a rock in the way. He was so dead, they said, Jesus, don't move that stone because I'm telling you, it's going to smell. And yet Jesus had raised him from the dead. Bethany was the home of Lazarus and his sisters, Mary and Martha. And that is where Jesus came. But you see, Jesus did not come without some trouble. He had been there not so long ago. As I said, he raised Lazarus from the dead there. Caused such a stir, such a commotion, so much fear in the Pharisees, in the chief priests, in the scribes, and in the leaders, that they said, if we don't do something about this man, all the people are going to follow him. And if all the people follow him, then we're going to have trouble. Rome is going to come and squash us. And we can't risk that. We have to get rid of this guy. So Jesus left Bethany till things cooled off again. And 6 days before Passover, he returns. He returns because he knows the path he's on. He knows his death is imminent. And he's come to celebrate his last Passover with the people he loves. Somehow at this dinner, Mary seems to understand this. Do you notice how many times Jesus talks about his death and the disciples go, no, that's not what happens to the Messiah. The Messiah lives forever. The Messiah makes us a great nation again. The Messiah restores us to all of the wonderful things we celebrate at Passover. Don't talk about dying. That's not what we want to hear. Yet somehow something has touched Mary. Perhaps it's at the dinner looking at the brother whom she thought she would never get to look at again. Perhaps it's in knowing the price that Jesus would pay for raising her brother from the dead, because she had to have known the rumors that they were out to kill Jesus. Maybe she even understood more fully than the disciples that were closest to Jesus, Peter, James, and John, who were his inner circle, who he was always taking extra time to explain things to. Peter, who they tell us in another gospel, when Jesus explains that he's going to die, says, "No, don't do that." Somehow, Mary seems to understand. Before Jesus has even fully revealed what the plan is, she seems to somehow understand that if she doesn't act now, she's not going to have a chance to show how grateful she is for all that Jesus has done in her life. At this dinner, and this is the only other place that dinner is used in John besides the dinner for the Passover, the Last Supper. It's the same word that John uses for the Last Supper. And notice the action. She anoints his feet. What will Jesus do at the Last Supper for his disciples? He will wash their feet as an act of love and ask them to serve in like manner. And yet here's Mary, acting in such a servant, giving, gracious, outpouring of love for Christ manner, even before Jesus has fully revealed that way of serving others. She goes, and she gets a bottle, a jar of very precious perfume. It's made of nard. And nard comes from a plant, a flower, that grows in the Himalaya mountains. It is not something readily accessible. But it is cultivated, it is brought down in the caravans. And only those who can afford it have it. But every woman who can afford it wants some of it. It is something so precious, so desirable, that the most common way to use it is just to put a dab on your finger, much the way we do very costly perfume today, and just touch it. And that's all. She takes the whole jar, not a dab, not a handful, not a little bit, but she takes the whole jar and she pours it out over Jesus' feet. The amount she uses is extravagant. I mean, you think about it. It is the extravagance of using a jar full of flowers from the Himalayas in the middle of the desert. Basically, in Bethany. She uses an extraordinary amount and an extraordinary cost. Perhaps in the version you read, it said that the amount that she used would have been worth 300 denarii. One denarii was one day's wages. How much money do you make a year? That's how much she poured out on Jesus' feet. That's how extravagant her gift was. That's how much Christ meant to her. That's how much she was willing to give. Because of what she knew Christ was about. What she knew Christ had given to her. And in Jesus' response, of saying, she's done this in preparation for my burial. There seems to be some sense that she, of all people, seems to know what Jesus is about to do. She gives an extravagant gift. She shows extravagant gratitude because of the extravagant grace that she's been shown and is about to be shown in the death of Jesus Christ. There are those who object. In John's Gospel, particularly the person to object is Judas. He can't see giving that kind of extravagance to that kind of moment. If you had been there, who would you have been? Mary, pouring out a year's worth of wages. Possibly her safeguard for any kind of tragedy in her life. Her retirement plan. Her life savings. Her precious heirloom. Or would you have been Judas, standing there going, maybe not for the reasons that Judas was standing there saying, excuse me, but this could have been sold for a whole lot of money. Perhaps I would have been standing there going, excuse me, don't expect this woman to give so much. Excuse me, Jesus, but don't you think about what she has just sacrificed herself? What are the excuses we come up with to hold ourselves back and say, to do such a thing is a waste? She wasted. Wasted on some feet a year's worth of wages. And yet Jesus says what she's done is right and good and wonderful. She's poured out her life savings. She's poured out her security. She's poured out all that she has. And has Jesus not called us to pour out our lives for Him? Because He is about to pour out His life for us. As we prepare to go to communion, I wonder if we're prepared to receive at that kind of level what Jesus has done for us. To acknowledge that He has poured out His life for us. He's given it all. And it's our choice. We can give nothing in return, or we can give all. According to the Gospels, there's no in between. Let us prepare to go to communion.